Hamburger.
Hello and welcome to Uncovering the Seniors, our podcast about the scene here in Copenhagen. And today we have a very special episode. We have Chris and Osgood here.
Hello.
Osgood.
Hello.
And Nana P.
Yeah, hello.
And we are really happy to have you both here. This will be special because Nana was the artist in residence at Mandagsklubben. And what that exactly is, maybe Chris, you can speak a bit about that.
Yeah, well, Mandagsklubben has been running for over 5 years with music every Monday, six sets of music. And each month we have an artist who gets to play the full month, the 9 o'clock set. So that's usually five concerts. We've had many different artists, and usually we decide like a year in advance who the artist is going to be. And so we've known for quite some time we're going to do this, and it was great that Nana P wanted to be artist in residence. And I think we can talk about this a little bit, but I think you presented some very different, very strong ensembles. I saw two of them and I was totally blown away by the greatness of the vision and the music you did. So I unfortunately didn't catch the large ensemble, which I really want to see, but maybe you guys saw that.
The one yesterday?
No, it was the last month, Extemporized Orchestra.
But yeah, because I'd like to hear a little more about that whole concept also. Mm-hmm. But that's basically what it is. So where we are right now is that Nana just completed her residency, so she played the last 4 weeks. Can you talk a little bit about which choices you made for this residency, maybe?
Yeah. For me, it was a very good way of framing the bands that means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. It's not saying that the other bands that wasn't presented is not meaning something, and because they do. But it's like rounded me up for this whole year, actually, to think about what do I want to achieve, and all these four bands, I would like to make a record with them. Mm-hmm. And actually, like, with Nieselhorns that I did this like yesterday, I applied for some money for recording, and actually it's running out in November because then it's been 2 years since I got the money. And
so
I
have the time pressure to release until then.
Yeah, but it's also like time's just going away. I think I'm very easily occupied in organization work and stuff like that, and teaching, and then the other things comes after, and it shouldn't be like that. And this residency has made me more aware of that I want to keep the other things in front and not like
Sometimes I think like that residency, it's almost like that's how it should be. Like that's what the like ideal reality for most artists should be. Like you have a weekly situation you can work towards, present your work, and I mean, so yeah, I wish it was more like that.
But I know a lot of people are also taking chances, like thinking, okay, now I should see what I can work with and present it. Which I think is super nice as well, because then you see the artist in other dimensions maybe, and with other people than normal. But for me, it was kind of important, or not kind of, it was very important to think about, like, some of the groups I started in like 10 years ago. No, 6 years or seven. Oh, shit. Oh, I'm so bad at years, but... Yeah, no, 9 years ago, I think. And Skærmtid, that I started the residency with, we hadn't played for 3 years. And it was super nice to get the opportunity and take it. And it I think for all of us it was super nice, so we were like, okay, why are we not playing?
That also sounds like that's a project that was really close to your heart, if you say like you wanted to take it almost like a plan or a guideline for the year. You said that earlier.
Yeah, it's not just musicians that I like playing with, it's also people that I love being around and that has given me a lot through the years about life in general. So I presented Skærmtid, which is Herman Münzing and Knut Finsrud, and I started playing with them when I was studying at the conservatory in Malmö, and I chose them because I could choose some hours, and then it was just super fun to play with, and we continued. And then I presented The Name Comes Later, and we might actually change the name. Maybe that's why we're called The Name Comes Later. And it's a pretty new project, but it's also really, really nice. We're working a lot. We started working together, like, to go deeper into improvisation.
Who plays in that project?
It's Halim Kim on drums, and then Aurelius Ushemeskis. Nice. On bass.
Is that how it's pronounced? Ushemetsky?
I don't know. Ushemeskis.
I keep messing that name up.
He would probably say no.
He's
if
fantastic,
he was
though.
Here. Yeah.
We should have him do a podcast if you haven't already done it. Yeah.
Totally.
And then I did Extemporized Orchestra the next Monday. And then Niesel Horns yesterday.
Yeah. Can you say the lineup also of the last two projects?
Yes, I can. Oh my god!
Here we go.
You know, it's called orchestra.
Is it always the same guys and girls, same people?
Yeah. If they can. Mm-hmm. There were some people that couldn't make it, but it's normally it's Cornelia Nilsson on drums. She couldn't make it, so Halim Kim went in, and now he's also part of it. Like, we're doing a gig on February at Club Primi, and there he's going to play Korean percussion.
Okay.
Nice.
They are learning my signs, then every instrumentation can be part of it as long as they understand what frame I'm giving.
Did you say science or science?
Signs.
Signs with
or
a G.
Or signals.
Signals,
like,
yeah. So which you use to conduct the orchestra. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so that's the drums. It's Asger Thompson on bass, and Petter Asbjørnsen also on bass. And then it's Henrik Olsen on guitar. And then it's Maria Bertel, but she couldn't make it. And Ulla Rabin, also on trombone. Erik Kimstad on trumpet, he couldn't make it. And then it's Birgitte Lyrgaard on vocal and Caroline Wallace on vocal. And Signe Emmelut on saxophone. And Maria Dybro on saxophone. Then I think I mentioned all of them. Christian Tangvik on tuba.
Yes.
He, not you forget. Shouldn't forget, actually. normally couldn't. And then Niesel Horns is one of the older groups. I started it when I studied at the Malmö Conservatory, and it's Christopher Rusted on drums, and then Johannes Vett on bass, and Erik Kimstad on trumpet, and then Peter Hengsel on trombone, and me on saxophone.
I'm interested to know a little bit more about the signs when you conduct. Like, did you invent the signs yourself, or is it based on some sort of improvised conducting tradition? Or
I invented it myself, but of course I have not been living in a bubble and not looking at what other people do. I haven't stolen any signs, but I might be doing the same as somebody else. My first encounter with it was with Lotte Anker, also in the Conservatory of Malmö, where she improvised, did like a ensemble teaching. And when I was there, in Malmö. I started playing when I was 19, and I used a lot of years on thinking, no, I started too late. Everyone is like, all the musicians I knew, because I was a volunteer at Dexter, where I also met you, Karsten, and everyone was just so amazing, and I looked up to them, and they were my friends. And then I felt like, if they asked, for example, to, how do you want to jam? I always said no, because I was so scared of them not wanting to be friends with me anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, like this, I was putting it, my personality so much into it, and thought that music was above this, so that they would not see me in the same, looking me in the same way, or how you say?
Perspective.
Yeah. So many times I said no, and was super scared of it. And then, I applied for MGK in Odense, and I think it was the third time I got in. Also super nerve-wracking for me every time. And there I also was older than everyone else, and all my friends, they were already on the conservatory. And then I applied here and in Malmö, and got in Malmö. Mm. And it was super nice, because then I could like just change everything, like just start from zero and try to be open. But I was still super scared. But I forced myself a little bit more into just doing. I had a concussion and was not able to play for a long time. And there I decided, because some doctor said, you can probably not play again, because I got a concussion and a whiplash.
Okay.
And that was then in Malmö?
No, that was in Sjælland. It was
But it was during your studies?
It was in the end.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. What I want to say with this is that it was actually quite... I can't say that it was good for me that it happened, but mentally it has done something to me, because there was like all the things I could remember was like, oh, I said no to this, oh, it would have been nice if I've done that, and like all these emotions about, okay, I can maybe not ever play again. And what was filling me up was all the times that I had said no to something. And then I decided that if I'm allowed to play again, like if it is in my cards that I can do this again, then I will promise myself to, if I get an opportunity of something, and it's because I'm saying no, or I want to say no because I'm scared, then I have to take a step forward and do it. And then I can regret it afterwards. But if it's something I don't want to do, then it's, of course, I'm allowed to say no. But I'm really trying to keep this close to my heart, because most of the time, like this, for example, I wanted to say no because it sounds scary.
Yeah.
We're super happy that you that you came, that you're sharing this with us. No, it's great. It's really, I think it's a wonderful attitude to have. And I remember times where I was super nervous a lot to play with certain people and rather not do anything.
Just hide in your basement, right? That's the best. The safe space. I was wondering, was the recovery hard from this whiplash thing, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I didn't mention it to talk about it so much.
Okay.
Because
it's
in the past, but it's just, it has been a flipping point for me also.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like talking. I just thought about it of this. When you want to improvise and you want to play music, or like, I think that I could have developed much more in that time period if I had, instead of thinking all the time, I'm too old. I have had my time, and then still doing it somehow, but like vaguely. Instead of just taking
the it's force, so real, like, what you're saying, and it reminds me of my teacher Ed Thigpen, who told me the same thing. He said, my whole youth I was scared, and I got all these opportunities, you know. Billy Strayhorn wanted to let's compose a piece together, you know. Mm-hmm. Told him that, and it was like turned him down because he was too nervous. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. another time Denzel Best, the legendary bebop drummer, wanted to practice. Mm-hmm. let's have a steady practice routine together, and he also turned it down. And mm-hmm. and he was also thinking about all these wasted opportunities, and mm-hmm. kind of realizing that he had to. Mm-hmm. Exactly what you're talking about. So I think it's mm-hmm. beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think I would have realized it if I didn't have the concussion, because mm-hmm. everything was taken away from me. Mm-hmm.
But so, as far as the sound of your playing, you have very radical sound on the tenor. Mm-hmm. To me, I mean, I've known you for many years. To me, you didn't change your fundamental approach to the horn from before the concussion to after. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing you're saying in a way, like thing you're working mm-hmm. on as mm-hmm. far as the expression. Do you have any comments on that? What you're going for with that?
No, I think I'm actually in the past there somehow. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think what you're hearing is totally correct. Mm. And then I'm trying to develop it. But where I was at before the concussion happened is like just when everything was kind of thriving for me. I got a lot of opportunities. I was like living in a suitcase, if you can say that, not having a steady home. Because I wanted to play improvised music, and knew that, yeah, I just wanted another kind of lifestyle. And that I cannot do again because of my concussion, but that's also fine. I'm super happy with having a steady home in Copenhagen. And also, like, for me, Copenhagen has so much to offer for improvisation. Mm. I've been a lot in Berlin, and it's also super nice. There's the Excite Musik page. You have a very clear overview of this is happening and this isn't this. And there's a nice community in Berlin, but it's a very changing community, and it's also changing here. But I think at the same time, it's also have a little bit more steadiness. It's not so much a city where people come for 2 months and going as mm. at the same, like in the same level of Berlin. It's much more transitioned. Mm. But that I also think they learned me openness, because it was the first time in my life when I went to Berlin where I came into a concert and just went up to some musicians and was like, wow, that's a great concert, I really loved it. And they were like, do you play? Yeah, I play saxophone. And with this kind of like, I'm a little bit shy. And they were like, do you want to have a session tomorrow? I was like, yeah, I would love to. You know, this, and after 2 months of being there, I had nearly a fully concert schedule or sessions every day, just for people being open towards me. Mm. Where in the other communities, Copenhagen, Odense, Malmö, even though I was studying, I always had the feeling that I should present myself. Like, I was the one going up saying, do you want to have a session? Mm. It was not the other way around. Mm. And that really made me like, wow, they are open to like, okay, this is a new person coming into town, instead of being like, too much tourist. Then they're just like, yeah, I want to see what you can do. I mean, and not just see what you can do. I want to interact with you and communicate with you. That was quite impressive for me. And I would like to keep that rolling. And I remember now why I started talking about the concussion. Because I met Lotte Anker in my... we were talking about the sign language.
Yeah.
And before, I was more like scared of playing. And during the conservatory in Malmö, I always, when improvising or playing with somebody, I had this record player going like, oh shit, that's bad. And I didn't know, actually. It was just something that had were allowed in my brain to do. And then I became aware of it because Lotte was making signs to us. And suddenly, I couldn't be so introvert. I had to use my eyes in like, when am I gonna get a new sign? And she had the responsibility somehow, like I was not only responsible because she gave me a frame. And for the first time I felt alive playing, and also there was the first time that I improvised and not just over a form like this more traditional modern way. And I felt suddenly that I had a connection, and it was just mind-blowing for me. And then I was like, this is how I should, because I was doing teaching master, ensemble teacher in jazz. So I was also teaching a bit, doing a practical...
internship.
Pedagogical, yeah.
And then I started doing a little bit of science, but mostly like, I was thinking like, okay, there's groove, there's something you want to loop, you know, like this, there's a line, creating a melody or just a line. And I was just like thinking about this very basic science for non-improvisers to improvise and feel safe. And it was super fun to do it. And I felt that I could interact with them without stopping the music. And also, I was a little bit tired at the time with playing mainstream music in ensemble. And the teachers were always like just sitting, listening to us, and then talking about bar number 5, where I could have played maybe a stronger note. No, but now I'm maybe also exaggerating. But yeah, there was sometimes this thing where we talked about the music after. You could have maybe changed there and done this and blah, 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 and stuff like that. Where it's nice with science, I have like a sign that's called change direction. So if you want somebody to change direction, then you can just show it. And I've also been teaching a little bit in school, Folkhögskola, where I've been using my signs where they're playing standards. And when I ask them, can you play a standard for me? They choose a standard. They're super nice, like very high quality playing, but they always put it in the same order. Theme, solo, 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 maybe drum solo, theme.
Chase.
And chase also. Yeah, but there's just this pattern. You know what's coming, and it sounds super nice. There's nothing to talk about the quality, because they're digging into the music in the past. But then I started giving these signs in during this, like playing the standard that they know really well. It was super fun to hear, because suddenly I could hear their own voice and not the voice of the past.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a really cool concept to do, like as a way of pushing these people that do this traditional, very traditional structured thing. And like, do you get a lot of positive response from the students when you do that, or are they like, "What is going on?"
No, they are on so high level that anything that can make them go in another direction, they're super open. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
This makes me feel like telling a story of when I played, I did a clinic or whatever you call it, masterclass at the conservatory in Helsinki, the Sibelius Academy. And they had been told in advance that we were coming. It was Averklokken's 10-year anniversary tour. And Mikko Innanen hooked us up. And then the drum teacher at the conservatory was like a very famous fusion drummer. And he just had decided, you know, he had told the students, well, you can do this, but just understand, this man is a student level drummer. He had told his students. So that was like the attitude before I came. And then I do this whole talk about free improvisation and spirituality, and play some avant-garde piano and recite some poetry. And then I'm like, let's play something together. And, you know, no one has said anything. It's been completely stone-faced. I can't read at all if they what they're thinking. And then this trombone player asked him to come up. Let's play a duo together. You know, I'm totally ready. And then it's like he just looks at me like in a really hateful way, and then he goes like, 1, 2, I want, and looks at me like, I just get so pissed off. I just there's a whole bucket of like used sticks, timbales sticks, and all kinds of sticks there. I just take the whole bucket and start throwing the sticks after him, and he keeps playing the tune. Bah, 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 looks at me like I'm just like trying to hit the trombone like with the sticks, and finally I get him really hard in the kind of on the side of the head with one of the sticks, and he has to stop playing. And yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
And what happened next? That's what I'm thinking.
What happened next was the kind of this. I mean, I think I diffused the situation after that. I felt like I had said everything with that with that action. You know, everyone knew. And then so after that, I kind of just like, yeah, so that was horrible or whatever. And let's anyone else want to feel like playing?
But nobody did, right?
No, I think someone came up. But Overklokken was there. So I think Løvedal and Vang came and maybe got someone else to play. And we had a larger group or something. I can't remember. Okay. Whatever. But
But did you know that he had said that beforehand, or how did you?
Yes, I knew because the saxophone teacher there, who was Mikko Inanen's friend, who had set it up, was a super nice guy and super open to everything, and he said, "I should tell you. You know, this happened."
such a horrible thing to do. Yeah.
But also very brave. I mean, it tells a lot about your musicianship, I think.
I will never take something like that. I'm sure. I mean, I don't know if it says anything about musicianship, but
it
says something about
you.
How serious I take this. Yeah. Take this stuff. Like he was completely taking a shit on me.
Yeah. Yeah.
After having talked for 50 minutes about everything that I feel is important.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's really strange.
So yeah.
But I mean, now I think about 5E and the scene in Copenhagen. And I mean, I think all of these stories we take with us, and then we make a decision: is that how I want to do it? And also, you telling this story makes other people aware of like what is right and what is wrong.
Yeah.
And this situation was definitely not about communication. or like his approach, if you can say that it was.
Yeah, but
is that how you would communicate in a meeting, for example?
I found out now that I'm older and more wise. I found out that sometimes I misunderstand cultural differences quite gravely, and I think actually the fact this being Finland, you know, I think I could have been prone to an entire misunderstanding of the darkness of Finnish humor and irony. Like maybe that initial comment about me being a student level drummer was even meant more as a joke than I take it. And the student doing that might be him trying to show some kind of sign of his intelligence in a weird Finnish roundabout way, actually telling me that he understood what I was talking about. So in that's if you look at it that way, I could have let him down immensely by somehow not living up to my own idols, my own ideal about. But I think about that a lot because it also dealing with Masabumi Kikuchi, who I had a regular fight with, physical fight with, and that was also fundamentally based on a misunderstanding of like Japanese communication and Danish communication.
I want to hear that story.
I think didn't I tell it already in the other podcast or no?
No,
I'll make it short. I'll make it a little short because I really want to talk more to you about. Sorry. What you're thinking about and what you're doing also in the future. I'll make it very short just because otherwise it'll be too much of a cliffhanger for the listeners out there. The short story is I had a really deep connection with Masabumi. I made this record with him. I lived in his house, his apartment with him in Chelsea for a week, and it was fantastic. We were listening to Burial records and talking about music and drinking wine. And then I go home and he's calling me every day and leaving messages on my answering machine. That's when we had answering machines. In the middle of the night, you know, waking up everybody's like, why not call me back? You don't love me anymore. And like stuff like that. And I had to call him. And So he arranged this gig at the Stone, and I flew back to do this, and he was going to record it and put it out on ECM and blah, blah, blah. And it was him and me and Thomas Morgan, and then he added suddenly two other people to the gig, a guitar player and a saxophone player. The saxophone player, who he had completely abused earlier on a promotion gig, like yelling at him on stage, but the guy came anyway, but the vibe was super weird. And then the gig culminated, can you say that? In him, completely packed, him starting to play something very beautiful. And I joined him after like 40 seconds because I felt very safe in his presence. Mm. I felt like it was more about what we had to say together than what he had to say.
Mm.
Mistake number one. So I came in beautifully, and Thomas came in with me, and then I immediately sensed that something is wrong, and I look over at Masabumi, and he's just looking like... He just looks like incredibly intense and angry. He looks like, I don't know, a withered cucumber or something like that. And I'm just like, shit. And then I try to engage with him more in the music, and then it just feels wrong. And he then suddenly yells, "Brushes!" And everyone is there, like the whole New York. It's like a really big thing that he's playing this gig in his own name. He never performed it. And it's, you know, so it's like all my heroes are in the audience. You know, Henry Grimes is in the audience. He's yelling "Brushes" at me, like in New York, like in front of everybody. And I'm just like thinking, okay, yeah, I can see that. Brushes. Maybe he has another sonic reality where he's sitting at the piano. It is hot in here, you know. Yeah, cool. Okay, Brushes. Pick up Brushes, you know, that can work. Now it's getting longer than I said it was going to be.
It's
the
fine,
story.
Right?
The Brushes, and then I think again we're starting to hook up, and then I look over. I'm kind of afraid to look at him again, so I'm more concentrating on the other two. Like the saxophone player almost hasn't played anything. He's completely freaked out. He's just like, and the guitar player, he's trying to win over, because the guitar player has been playing a lot of trio with Thomas and Masabumi while I've been in Denmark. Mm. So they've been practicing together a lot as a trio. So he's trying to take over to become more like a chamber situation where he can really engage. He's playing acoustic guitar. He's a very intelligent guy, so he's like trying to make it into that, and I'm kind of playing Brushes, and then Masabumi just yells like, "Give me some space." And that's kind of it, you know. Then I can't really, and I stop playing, and I just sit there looking at him like. And now he doesn't look at me anymore. He looks away and is ignoring me completely. And then it becomes this chamber trio that the guitar player was hoping for. And then they have this going on. That sounds really good. It's going on for 30 minutes maybe. And I don't play at all. At one point I get down and just sit on the floor and just look up at Masabumi, and the saxophone player is still freaked out, not playing anything. And then the concert ends, and I never come back in. The concert ends, and the crowd goes crazy, and we have to play an encore. And I walk over while they're clapping. I walk over and stand next to Masabumi, and I try to like look into his eyes, and he looks away. He doesn't want to look at me. And then I go back to the drums, and I play a little bit with mallets, kind of very spacious, and that's it. And then when we go downstairs, in the backstage room, we like get in a total fight, and it ends up later in his apartment with an even bigger fight. And the next day I leave in New York. But the reason I'm telling that story, it's a good story, and I learned a lot from it. Of course I learned very much from it. But I found out also through talking to people who knew Masabumi, and that it's really about him being Japanese. I mean, it's about him being comfortable communicating in an abusive way based on a deep tradition of art communication.
Okay.
Which I, you know, being a soft guy from Denmark with another completely different way of having a life with music, just I miss that. I miss that point completely. Mm. I don't realize that I have to be more sharp in a specific moment, and then it all breaks. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so it's, yeah, and the same thing with the Finnish thing. Mm. So what did I start talking about this? I can't even remember why we're talking about this.
I think the Finnish thing was
the Finnish thing was the trigger. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's back to you now? What are you going to do in this year? Which is starting a new year. What's happening in 2020 for you?
I promised myself to do a record with these ones. I think we're going to record in May and do that. That's like the biggest achievement maybe for me. And then I'm part of Barefoot Records. Mm-hmm. I've been this for some time now, haven't released anything. Mm-hmm. So that's like, I have to do it now. Mm. I mean,
how would you describe the music?
With Nieselhorns?
Yeah.
It's numbers.
Yeah. So it's like compositions.
And it's Peter Hengsel and me who is writing the music, not together, but writing different songs. It's very line, like made out of lines, if you can say that, because there's no chords. It's just bass.
You could reference like Tim Burton music, or does that make sense? Yeah. No?
Nieselhorns. I've played that repertoire a little bit. And it's kind of a there's some grooves and stuff and and like an original type of melodies and instrumental music.
Yeah, Callum said to me yesterday it reminds him of old Australian jazz music.
Well, he should know. He knows a lot about that.
Well, I mean,
the compositions you presented yesterday, so they haven't been recorded yet.
Some of them have. Unfortunately, I forgot the CD that we have released.
Yeah, I was looking yesterday, but I couldn't find any.
So stupid. Yeah. So that is on my list, and then there are the other stuff that I'm doing, like Impro Camp. I'm full on with that right now.
When is the Impro Camp?
That's from the 3rd to the 9th of August. And it's for musicians between 18 and 35. The limit of 35 can be higher if there are someone interested, but not underneath 18, because you're sleeping there and
So do you just register online, or how do you like get in contact with that if someone wants to join that?
I have a page called Lydpaletten on Facebook where I work on it, and we'll put the event out, and then I will email everyone that's participated last year and the year before. So that I'm working a lot on. We are doing the poster right now, and hopefully it will be out in the winter jazz period. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also doing a Multiply with the community at the Lygten during winter jazz, the 12th, the 14th, and the 16th. And here we want to combine the music scene. See, that's why we call it Multiply, because we're stronger together. And try to do community barefoot ilk, and we would like to make it grow year from year, so we can do something together also. Mm. And not just work separately. And then I want to play. I want to play.
Play all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and I definitely want to do more with the extemporize. I applied for Solist Linien.
Yeah.
Okay. Just
last year. Last week. What?
Here at the Rhythmisk Musikkonservatorium.
Yeah. Because I'm hoping to focus even more on my sign language.
I think
it's giving me a lot of energy, and I think I have another perspective of sign language compared to other great people like Walter Thompson and
Butch Morris.
What he did. But I'm not totally sure that I have a totally different view. But I think from Walter Thompson I have, I think he's very focused on instant composing and what he can create in this moment, where I I'm focusing on understanding the energy in the room, if you can say that. I'm followed by the energy in the room, and if I feel something from the musician is coming, then I'm hoping that I'm giving the space and changing the frame so this person can feel free.
Yeah, so you're more shaping the musician than creating the music.
Is that what is that called? Never mind. But so also my sign language is more, I think that like Walter Thompson, he has 1,500 signs right now. It's crazy. And that can work, of course. It is working, and he is there also writing books about it and teaching with it and everything. And it's, a common language in the music sign language now, like English, if you can say that. But that if I think that my sign language is Danish, then I think that language is just as much part of the world than English, or has something to say. And I would like to develop it so I become even better in understanding what's happening in the room. And also I'm fascinated about improvisation, like all these sounds we can create. So there is a sign for multiphonics, and everyone can understand multiphonics, so all instruments can make multiphonics, or like a layer of multiphonics, or or slap tongue, or stuff like that. I'm curious on how can I create this world that I love listening to.
The jazz musician part of me always misses these signs that are like, you know, okay, I'm going to take an extended solo, accompany me and make some nice backgrounds. What's the sign for that? Yeah. Like, that's
like if you,
I got this.
That's, I would probably say follow this guy, support him or her.
But you said before you try to pick up what the musicians are also trying to do, right?
And like, I'm trying to understand it, there is also, I mean, it is also, I'm giving them frames, and it might not always be their own intention, or be very far from their own intention, because I'm working with improvising musicians that are used to interact and go with their own intuition. I'm working with the same crowd, because I feel I've understood now, and also from Butch Morris reading about his approach, I understand, because I work a lot ad hoc with a lot of ad hoc people, and then like having 1 hour of learning my sign language and then playing. And there's so much restriction in the room when that happens, because they haven't learned it. It's not being part of them, and suddenly they have to be aware of me looking, and maybe they are normally playing with eyes closed, and then there's so much tension instead of just being there. Where now that I'm working with the same people, and also developing the science, like every session we have, some new is happening, a new sign or. Something like before I did like play like this, and now this thing has come if I want to like go back to the previous sign. Like stuff like that is small, but it just make our communication even more on the point. And I hope that, or I chosen these people because I'm curious about their playing and I like what they are doing. And then I'm hoping that I can get influenced in new signs, and I also sometimes make them do sound files to me, like what are the three sounds that you are loving or playing the most at the moment, and then they send it, and then I can categorize it, mm-hmm. and then I can work from there, and then I know that maybe something is happening.
Mm, interesting.
So
that's very bound to the musicians. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really trying to understand. Yeah.
So you end up with unique sounds for unique persons, like this is the trumpet player playing his favorite sound or whatever.
But that's the thing, actually. If let's for example say that I'm giving as A1 to Erik because he sent me the sound, and then I can ask the whole group to follow his sound, so they have to imitate that. Mm. And I mean, that could maybe become a sign at some point, but
it's also a really nice way of making the whole orchestra aware of their own sound and of their individual's sound, right? Mm. I guess.
Yeah.
Do you play yourself?
No.
Have you thought of yourself in there, like using the ensemble as a platform for your own playing?
No.
Then you can do this background thing.
I'm just
me solo.
No, just like the whole. I mean, you probably heard these, like for instance, the late Coltrane that Alice Coltrane produced, where they do like washes of strings and harp overdubs on top of very abstract rhythm and playing, and you know, it's a beautiful.
I haven't heard that
beautiful sound. There are many examples of this type of thing. Where
what record?
Where the record is called?
Do you remember?
It's called
Universal Consciousness.
That could be one of them. Yeah, there's a couple. I'm sorry, I can't remember now.
Transcendence.
Transcendence, I think, is one of them.
That's the first three tracks are with strings, and the rest is like total Kumbaya vibe.
Yeah. That's the one with the blue and yellow cover, right? Kind of a big like mosaic blue and yellow cover.
It's Harrington Ashram.
No. The mosaic cover, I think, is Lord of Lords or Universal.
No, that's not. I know that one too, okay. But yeah, that's the one that came on Coltrane Records.
Okay.
The label that they made together with, where they only released one record.
Oh yeah, it's like 60s still.
Stuff. Yeah.
Okay,
anyway, we're getting a little off track here.
No, that's I'm curious.
But but anyway, I love the way you sound on the saxophone, and there's a lot of it almost has like an Arthur Doyle quality sometimes, like very very gritty. And I was just thinking like it would be beautiful with some kind of orchestral situation, which you have the opportunity to really do with that ensemble. I mean, the people you have in that group are all razor sharp players who can do very intense textural. So yeah,
but I don't want to be in the focus in this group. I want to be the
medium for career. But if you develop a system, the question is also interesting whether the system is only you who can do, or the system can be used by other people with the same what can you say, like power, because then you can give the system to anyone in the group, and then you can play solo if you want to use it as a tool more.
That's
like
true. It might happen someday at 5e in Mandelsloom. That's also the thing, like I think Nieselhorns yesterday played the best concert we ever did, and I think it's because of the crowd.
Yeah, the crowd was loving it. Yeah,
so I mean, yeah, it was a really good vibe. I mean, I was almost blown away after playing the first number. We played Jolga, which is like going super fast, and people were loving it, and the love from the crowd was just like whoa, crazy. And this openness, like I have a jam in Tøjhuset nearly every Friday, not the last Friday but all the other Fridays in a month, where it's a Friday jam, it's called, because I wanted to be genre free, but they are used to more traditional jazz, and I have opened it up, like there's a band coming and playing every Friday, or yeah, opening the jam, and I try to give variation of different like singer-songwriter jazz, different types of jazz, blues, rock, whatever, and of course it's mostly jazz because that's my main focus, so I don't have such a big network in singer-songwriter. for example. Yeah. But I'm trying to get it.
Is this Fredericia? Tøjhuset Fredericia?
Yeah, that's in Fredericia. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, I had to listen to a lot of nagging, you know. But it's a free concert. You go in, it's been there since June 2017. Mm. And some people love it from the beginning and understand more abstract music, and other people want to hear the normal kind of music, if you can say that. And but it's a free entrance, and I already always said, like, but if you don't like it, come next Friday. And always read about what is saying in the event. It's described what's going to happen, or like explained what the band is about. And if you don't, and then also I found out that then they might be a little bit overwhelmed with the first concert, but then we go into the jam, then we play Fly Me to the Moon and all these songs that they know, which I also love playing actually, and then or some blues, and I try to, like, it's the jammers who are, like, if there come somebody who's not playing jazz, but only can improvise, then we do that. Or if somebody is want to play a pop song, then I find the people who can go up with that person and help it, do it, make it happen.
So I'm guiding the jam session,
and I feel that it's...
Do you use your signs in the jam session?
No.
You can guide them with the signs.
No. But I had Pierre Durrow playing, opening the jam, and he did it, and it was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was simple stuff he did, but then he asked us to go around in the crowd, the two saxophone players, and then we did that.
And then
yes, there you go, then it works. Yeah, and people like it. And but what I want to say with that is that... we have a community here in Copenhagen where we play improvised music. And but also yesterday I met a person who never been to 5E. So it can only grow, and it has such a big force already, and then it can just like keep on expanding, I think. And to get the common, or how you say, the
common
people,
men.
It's not nice to say common people, but the people who...
working class, that's the hardcore term.
Or the very rich people who only listen to pop music or whatever, they... Oh, shit. Now we stop.
Some rich people, yeah, maybe I should cut you off here then.
Yeah, yeah, it's too much.
This is a family show.
Yeah, but what I want to say is that some of the people who didn't like it in the start, they start to hear melodies when they didn't hear melodies before.
Mm-hmm.
So they have expanded their ears. So I think we can go a lot more out with our more advanced playing. I haven't played like we do on 5E. I haven't done that. But like, for example, doing a blues, I always go crazy there, and they don't mind it. It's okay. And I think that they say it's oplevelses jazz. They like this oplevelses jazz. Before they only liked what they know. Now they are curious on what don't we know.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
That's my feeling anyway.
I think it's very uplifting when you're talking about the Mandagsklubben. I think you're really right that there is always a bunch of regular people who go there to connect almost on a weekly basis, but there's always a handful of people, you know, maybe 10 people who are coming for other reasons, you know, just and bringing new people in, and it's quite a, it is really, I think, expanding the awareness of this kind of music in our city, for sure.
And it's also crazy that you can have you have it for 5 years and you have 6 concerts every Monday.
Sometimes 7.
Sometimes an artist talk before, and you know, it's
and a poet in between.
Could be 9 or 10 actually.
Yesterday also Alvaro the pianist, he brought his family, they were visiting, and he said to them, like, this is not the music you usually listen to, but you have to go there because it's really an experience to see the style of the city and to see the community of the city be there in this place and create music with each other, for each other. And they were loving it.
Oh, good.
They were like, they were blown away. So
yeah, and there's no, like, even though you listen to 6 concerts of improvised music, none of them sounds the same. Mm-mm. Like, none.
Yeah.
That's also an amazing feeling of, yeah, how wide our communication is. And
I just love how confused you can be as an audience member. Yeah. Like, that's what I enjoy the most.
Yeah, like, I was about to say that too. Yeah. It can really be confusing sometimes. Yeah. I'm confused. I'm booking it, but I have no idea what's going, going to happen.
That's what I love the most. I'm just like, I'm so confused right now. And it's just the greatest feeling.
But I think every week there's always at least 2 or 3 things of like really high quality improvisation going on where you can really almost trace the development of the integrity and the quality of the language that's being developed, which I think is a local thing. I mean, we talked about this before, but like each city has its own dialect in a way.
Also, I mean, I'm not here long enough, but you said that once also. You see some of those people playing since 5 years or however long Manners Club exists, playing concerts there regularly, and it's really, you see their style developing, and you see them change as personalities in music growing up there.
Immensely,
That's also, it's very impressive.
That's why documentation is so important in a place like that. Because I don't think it's going to last forever. I mean, we're in the middle of it now and we're thinking it's going to be like this forever, but
really,
it might be gone in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah,
that's kind of, I mean, the culture changes.
Yeah, but also like the gentrification of that area is just going to get eaten up, don't you think?
That could happen. Or
no.
I mean, you just
look at New York, like look at Berlin, like the cities change and also the needs of the people who live in it change.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a big part of what runs this scene also, which we haven't talked about, is the RMC. I mean, the RMC is really a big part of the input and output from the other European countries to the city. Like, it gives them a reason to be here. And if you look at the program at the Monday Club, there's always a big representation of
students
or ex-students from the RNC.
Yeah.
Somehow that is very linked with the whole scene, which I think is a difference from Berlin, for instance, or New York, where there are also big music schools, but it's...
But they're not looking into improvised music.
Yeah. And your description of the Berlin scene, I think, was very right and reminded me of the New York scene, which is also very open and straightforward, and you can get invited to do a session the next day and a gig, and you know, it happens, everything happens. So I think you're right, Copenhagen is different that way. Even though the community is very warm and strong, there's another kind of I've heard other people say that it can be difficult to get inside somehow, if you're not studying at the conservatory, maybe. I don't know,
might be
to be continued.
Are we everything?
Is it 1 hour?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Should we? Do you play any concerts or have any upcoming releases or anything that you want to plug?
I have Club Primi the 4th of February. And then I'm also arranging a concert series at Roger Co in Amager. So if there are some Copenhagen loving improvisers who have never been to Amager, then they should go to this place because it's an amazing place. It's close to Amager Bo Station, and it's a small cafe, and it's in the middle of the day. It's a Sunday, we do it every month, one Sunday every month, and it's coffee and croissant, and then you can buy the chair you're sitting in or a plant with your home. She has a lot of great stuff there. And she's a super open person. She's one of these people who just love improvised music. But and I just went in there for coffee, and then we started talking. And then she said, yeah, let's make something happen. and super nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the name of the place again?
It's Roger Co.
Roger Co. Mm-hmm. And what's the can you see the address just for the Amagerbrogade or what?
Not Amager. It's a side street for Amagerbrogade.
Roger Co.
Roger Co. Like you can
Facebook
go into
or,
website. Or yeah, you can go into the community's Facebook page, and then the event is there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the opposite of Holmbladsgade.
Okay.
Yeah.
So instead of going to Holmbladsgade from Amagerbrogade, then you go to down the street. I forgot the name. Right.
Okay. And you're doing when? What's it? Every week or?
It's once a month.
Once a month. Yeah.
Yeah. And Morten Carlsen was there mm-hmm. Last Sunday. We did it, and he was. Playing digital and electronic sounds that he did many years ago and, mm. and telling about it. And there are a lot of people, I mean, when there's 18, then it's pretty crowded, it's a small place.
Mm.
But there is people who never listened to improvised music before.
Mm.
And that's a very nice feeling.
Mm.
Yeah, so...
Word.
Mm.
Cool.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And the next month's artist in residence?
Yeah, it will be Thomas Dabrowski.
What?
Yay!
Yeah.
Who's also part of Barefoot Records. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. And nice. Yeah, we hope to have him in the yeah. chair soon. Nana P, thanks for talking yeah. to us and being so eloquent yeah. about what you're doing. Thanks yeah. a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
And thank you for your work. Mm. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Yes.